We can't just say on our own among these elite that that's what we want to get done. We want to overthrow the Iran regime, so we're just going to use military power. You can't be naked like that, because the American people, a bunch of them, do still care. So you have to manufacture some sort of justification. First, it was those poor protesters. That didn't work out, and the protest was put down, so Trump can't do that. And then he said, okay, well, you know what? It's actually the nuclear program, except for you said that you obliterated it, your word, in 2025. Oh, well, oh, I know. We have evidence that they're trying to reconstitute it somewhere else besides these places, and they can't do that. And then, you know what? Actually, though, it's missiles. Yeah, that's what it is. Your long-range missiles, that can't be done, because Trump, like he remembered, you know what? That was part of my claim in 2018 when I got rid of the JCPOA, the thing that genuinely did prevent Iran from getting a nuclear program. And all of a sudden, now then they start ramping that up. But so we got rid of that then. And part of the claim at the time was, Trump said, I'm going to negotiate a better deal that's going to include those long range missiles. I guess he forgot about that. Well, suddenly he remembers when they're looking for more justification, because they're like, yeah, they never did that. So that's actually what it's about. Oh, and these proxies, these pesky proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis. Yeah, let's add them to the mix too. So now then you're saying, all right, if you'll have a negotiated settlement, Iran, we can still bypass this, because the American people still matter. Public opinion still matters. So they have to have some kind of a deal that sounds reasonable on the surface of it. Look, they're killing those poor people on the ground. You don't want those protesters to be killed. That's not democratic. And look at all this threat that they pose to us. They're a threat to the whole world. It's not just to the Israelis. It's all over the place. So they just make stuff up. Everything that we can do to make it sound like they are really scary in this dark future, just like we did with Saddam Hussein in 2003. They don't even want to worry about an AUMF this time or an authorization from Congress. They certainly don't want a declaration of war. They don't want anybody to constrain President Trump, the unilateral action of the commander-in-chief. They want to have no constraints whatsoever. So that's what they want to go here. So then we have this situation here where we're going after regime change. Well, one senator at another Senate testimony that was also not hardly paid any attention to, another obscure portion of it, the secretary, current Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was asked when he was supposed to be talking about Venezuela. One of the senators asked him, hey, about this whole thing with Iran.
What happens if the supreme leader is removed in Iran? What happens next?
Well, that's an open question. I mean, no one knows who would take over. Obviously, their system is divided between the supreme leader and the IRGC that responds directly to him. And then you've got these, you know, quasi-elected individuals, the ones that wear the suits on television who are part of their political branches, but ultimately have to run everything they do by the supreme leader. So I don't think anyone can give you a simple answer as to what happens next in Iran if the supreme leader and the regime were to fall, other than the hope that there would be some ability to have somebody within their systems that you could work towards a similar transition. I would imagine it would be even far more complex than the one we're describing now, because you're talking about a regime that's in place for a very long time. So that's going to require a lot of careful thinking if that eventuality ever presents itself.
That's going to require a lot of careful thinking, he says, as there's already plans to knock them out, and there's a desire to do so. You don't even know what you're going to do next. Now, that is telling. I have come to conclude that that's not an oversight, or that's not just an embarrassment that we didn't ever think of that. No, I think that this is, and along with the soundbite I'm about to show you next from just 2 days ago, I think that that is the plan. The plan is simply to create chaos. It's not regime change. It's regime destruction, because in the Iraq situation in 2003, it was a regime change. And we actually had a resource plan to go in there and change. And we had government officials and civilians and military folks, all this stuff. We did it really badly. But the idea was let's rebuild their regime into something that's going to be wonderful for the United States and friendly and everything like that. But we had people already identified to go in and start to do that job. This time, however, it appears that we don't want to do that job. We just want the one that's there to be destroyed, and then something like Syria. I think we're trying to do in Iran what we did in Syria, we being the United States and Israel, which now has somebody who was on the terrorist list until right before with a $50 million bounty on his head, al-Sharaa. But he's not in charge of everything. He's only in charge of part of it. Israel's part of, in charge, part of the South. There's some SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, have some control in some portions of the central and north. You have Turkey has some control over portions of the its border area here. So it's complete chaos. And even within the part that Sharaa is in control of, there's still a lot of chaos there and a lot of factions that are fighting. And that's by design, I think. So Israel and the United States want to keep them chaos. And I think that now they're trying to set the stage to have more chaos here. That theory was bolstered a couple of days ago when Lindsey Graham in an interview was asked also about what comes next.
Does the U.S. have a favored candidate? Are we talking about Reza Pahlavi? Because he's around quite a bit.
Yeah, I like him fine, but it's up to the Iranian people. Mm. Don't get ahead of yourself. The day after the regime falls will be complicated.
We don't do day after well in
it's,
the U.S.
That's what you got to quit saying. We, it's not we, it's them. Mm. It's not my job to construct a new Iran. It's my job to give them the opportunity to construct a new Iran.
It's not my job to construct a new Iran. It's my job to give them an opportunity. Translation into normal English, I don't care. I could care less what comes next. All I want to do is destroy the one that's there so that it's no longer an issue at all for Israel. So they don't have to worry about having good relations. They don't have to worry about giving anything. They just have this chaos, and you can be guaranteed that Israel will make it a normal part of their governing process going forward, that they will keep whatever pops up next to be divided. You heard him. They're talking about Pahlavi, the relative of the Shah of Iran, the one that was overthrown in the 1973 revolution. His offspring. Some are saying let's put him in there. Well, he's a tremendously divisive figure. Large portions of the country absolutely detest him. That's why they overthrew him in the first place. And I think that's by design, too. They want to keep it separate. So then other people and other, you know, if this regime were to fall, you would certainly have other clerics rise up. You'd have other Islamic folks rise up. And that would also be by design. That would also be supported. They would want many poles competing against each other, like what is happening in Libya to this day. There are still two competing governments inside of Libya to this day. And I think that that's part of the plan. They want to see chaos reign in the region where nobody is strong enough even to have a coherent government. And that is foolish. That keeping things unstable may seem good on the surface because it's like that keeps us in control the whole time. But that gets wearisome after a time. You have to constantly keep things stirred up. And when you do that, let me be clear about this. This is sowing seeds for future terrorism against Israel. People are not going to be passive with this. And especially with what's going on in the Gaza Strip and in the West Bank, they're creating more of these seeds of future terrorism by just oppressing the people to incredible levels. And when you do that to an entire region, folks, listen, this is just human nature. It doesn't matter if you want it to work out that way or not. You are sowing the seeds and putting fertilizer in to make sure they grow up. You think that I can fight my way and kill my way to success and keep everybody divided and keep killing anybody that might rise up to take power and just keep this controlled chaos, right? That's what it's called, controlled chaos, only until you can't. And then one day people get fed up with it enough and then they take action. So you're creating condition. If you succeed here, and you've already succeeded in Syria for the moment anyway, but if you also succeed here, you are guaranteeing long-term instability and threats to your own country. It's not going to work out, man. If you love Israel, if you love the Israeli people, you should be against this as I am. I have been arguing since about a week after 10/7 when it was clear what Israel was going to do in the Gaza Strip area, that they were taking actions that were antithetical to their future stability. They were not bringing security to their country. They're sowing the seeds, deep seeds, deeply planted, for instability and insecurity. And now they wanted to spread even more seeds. And today, right now, they have enough power that they can do this. And when those seeds start to rise up, they can maybe knock them out and buy themselves a number of years even, maybe a decade. This doesn't necessarily have to come tomorrow if they succeed here. But the time will come. And the human nature will run its course, and then these things will come out. And, of course, it'll be too late to do anything about it then. The only thing we can do right now is to not do this. Unfortunately, in the United States, we have this whole merchants of death, I call it, this chorus that is just flooding the airwaves in the United States, social media, mainstream media, wherever they can get it. And they are doing everything in their power to create and support the narrative, just like what happened in 2003, to where this narrative supported the Iraq war, just like what happened under the Obama administration in Libya. Everybody was talking in all these moralistic tones about what we were going to do and how we were going to help the people. It was always about the people, right? And yet it turned into a civil war there. Syria has been blasted. That was also a lot, mostly under Obama's tenure. Started it there anyway. They were trying to get a regime change, and it didn't work for a long time, but finally it did. And now there's chaos and violence there. So that's what is on the table. Now, let me show you that this is not just one or two people. This is here's another kind of mashup of a lot of what the people are saying in the United States for so long and right now in this year. This is what I want you to see. This is broad, it's widespread, and here it is.
Any deal that the Iranians might strike, they'll do what they've always done. They'll lie, they'll cheat, they won't honor that commitment. And I'm confident President Trump is not naive enough to head down the same path that President Obama did, right?
The best answer to all the problems created by Iran is regime change.
There is an historic opportunity here to set the conditions through a military strike that puts the regime on the pathway to collapse.
Iran is taking a really big risk because Trump's armada ensures that Iran basically has no military options left. And make no mistake, President Trump is ready for action.
We now have a president who has demonstrated, not just through Midnight Hammer, but also through Absolute Resolve, the action against Maduro in Venezuela, that he is willing to use American strength.
Because Iran is not a normal nation. Iran is a revolutionary Islamist regime that has been exporting terror and bloodshed around the world for 47 years, most notably directed against the United States and Israel.
Iran very bluntly that if Iran doesn't come to the negotiating table in good faith to negotiate, then we are prepared to launch kinetic strikes.
It's clear that the regime in Tehran is trying to play for time in the hope that the United States loses the momentum or the energy to sustain the pressure. I think that's horribly misguided as the U.S. builds military forces.
Iran has to give up its enrichment capability. It has to give up its already enriched, highly enriched uranium. There's no reason except for a weapon that it's enriched to that degree. Also, its support for terrorism and its long-range ballistic missiles. They should listen, the president means what he says when he means he's going to take decisive action.
I think Donald Trump is going to act. And look, he has a choice now between following the example of Barack Obama, who drew a red line in Syria and not only didn't enforce the red line, but made a chemical weapons deal with the Syrian regime, and which they cheated on. Or he can choose the path of Ronald Reagan and FDR and become one of these presidents who has literally transformed the world.
Now, listen, folks, that was a sampling. There are others. You may have noticed that nearly all of those were from Fox News. I could have gone to MSNBC, CNN, Newsmax. There's a ton of them. They're all out there. And right, left, Republican, Democrat, there are plenty of people that are all about having this outcome and that are advocating it. Even some members of the Democrat, I think I showed earlier today on a different show, Senator Mark Warner. Is like, well, you know, I would do things differently, but yeah, I get it. That's what we need to do. And surely they deserve this to happen, et cetera. Nobody's pushing back on this. This is just something across the board, and it's getting more and more bold. And listen, there are several things that are at stake here. There's one about just like Israel is building up insecurity and instability for itself in the future and is sowing the seeds of future insecurity, we are too. This is creating more and more enemies than we may one day be able to handle. It is creating people that are seething with anger, many violently so, especially if they have any relation at all to the people that were killed, and whether it was the boats in the Caribbean Sea, whether it was the Cubans in Venezuela, the Venezuelans in Venezuela, or Iranians here. Or Houthis, Yemenis in the Houthis in Yemen earlier. We don't seem to care. We'll kill all kinds of people. Don't lose a minute of sleep over it. And some of the things that are said here, what that's effective, Propaganda is you take some things that are true and then you add whole categories that are not, and then you weave them all together like it's one. And there are a handful of things that were relatively accurate from some of these accusations and charges, but whole categories of lies that were added in, and even bigger categories of things left out that explains some of the actions on the other side. None of this is to say anything but good about the Iranian regime. None of this is to say anything that they are good or anything else. That's not even on the table. That's not even, I'm not even discussing any of those things. I'm talking about the United States of America. I'm talking about what is our character. I'm talking about what is our morality. And I'm talking about things that are just practically utilitarian for our security. How do we ensure our security? Or do we use our wealth and our money and our influence and our military capacity to undermine our security? For that is for sure what we're doing here. Now, as I'm making this video right now, we don't know what's going to happen in Iran. We don't know if President Trump is going to pull the string on this and launch all of this combat power that's in the region. And of course, if you do, you've seen a lot of our shows. I think that the chances are that we suffer a lot of casualties. Many people are going to die. Many Americans are going to die. Many Israelis are going to die, all unnecessarily, in this war of choice. Now, many of the advocates say, yeah, but we'll eventually win and then things will be better. I've already talked to you about that they won't, but that doesn't seem to bother a lot of these people. And I'll tell you, I'm going to pull one more person out for singular accusation and criticism, and it's deeply deserved. And that, again, is Senator Lindsey Graham, who had the audacity to say this war of choice that he's pushing on President Trump, and along with a lot of other people on that mashup I just showed you, they're trying to throw out the Obama card. Oh, President Trump can't be like Obama. He's not going to be Obama, because they're like saying, look, Mr. President, if you don't want us to accuse you of being Obama, which, of course, he hates, it's like a pejorative to him, then you need to take this action here. So they're doing everything they can to compel, coerce, or otherwise pressure Trump into doing something that they want, something that's antithetical to the American people and to our national security. Could directly undermine it by causing damage to our equipment, planes getting knocked out of the sky, ships getting sunk to the bottom of the sea, and men getting killed in the Middle East. And in that environment, Lindsey Graham has the audacity to bless the troops.
To those who may participate in this endeavor, God bless you. God keep you safe if that day does come. Could our soldiers be hit in the region? Absolutely, they could. Can Iran respond if we have an all-out attack? Absolutely, they can. I think the risk associated with that is far less than the risk associated with blinking and pulling the plug and not helping the people as you promised.
Consider what the bloody hell he just said there. He is telling, listen to me, every American service member, hear this. Every family member of American service, especially those that are deployed on this combat mission, listen carefully to what your U.S. senator just said. He said the risk to the death of your loved one or you as the service member is worth it, as opposed to the risk or the cost of not making good on a promise to the protesters in another country who don't like their government and were doing, trying to protest and say something about it. Do you agree to that? Do you think, and then to the family members, wives, sons, daughters, parents, will you sacrifice your loved one for some protesters in another country because Lindsey Graham wants it? I would not sacrifice one American's life, period, anybody, for the lust of Lindsey Graham. Let's be clear on that. And I wager to guess that there's not an American family member of our service members in uniform. None of our uniform service members, none of their family, friends, anybody. I bet nobody would say, well, yeah, I mean, I would sacrifice their life for somebody in Iran that I'll never see, never meet. No, nobody signs up. I didn't sign up to satisfy and satiate the lust of Lindsey Graham or of that whole merchant class of death that I just showed you that are so lustily talking about, yes, use military power. Let's use lethal power here. Let's kill them here. Let's destroy them there. that they aren't paying the price for that. American national security is not at stake. Let me categorically say that too. We have a military, and people do sign up to potentially sacrifice their lives, as I did, if it means defending Americans. If an American life is at risk, if Americans are being attacked somewhere, then I bet virtually every one of those people, even the family members, likely would say, I would hate it, but I can understand it. That's why they serve. That's why they signed up. If Americans are being attacked and somebody wants to unjustly take their life or wants to attack our country and somewhere else, that's why we have us, to stand in the gap. That's the purpose of our armed forces. It is not. It is now being bastardized by this merchant of death class and by the likes of Lindsey Graham, Jack Keane, Mike Pompeo, all those folks, every one of them. They're trying to say, I'm okay with some Americans that I don't know, some just, you know, service members here and there. And of course, the thing is going to make me, if I'm sick and tired about this, I will be sick to probably physically throwing up when, if this happens and some of our service members dies, and then I'm going to see these people, God bless our troops. They died defending America, defending freedom. They stood up for, I don't want to hear any of that because it will not be true. It will just be even further playing on the emotions of the American people. And to say, oh, those poor service members, oh, those poor, that poor wife of that person, oh, that poor mother, that's so terrible. But they died for a noble cause, and so we should honor them. No, this is a war of choice for the warlusters. That's it. That's it. It's not even for the security of Iran, Israel. They don't need to do anything to Iran. Iran, there's a reason why prior to the attack on the Iranian embassy and prior to the assassination in the capital city, that Iran had never attacked into Israel ever in its history. Only when those really strong acts of war happened, only then did they have a very tepid response. When we assassinated Soleimani in 2020, they didn't hardly do anything. They fired some missiles, again, choreographed and caused some wounded, but nobody got killed. And then they stopped. They said, all right, we're good to go. That's it. That's as far as we're going to go. Even though their four-star general, their version of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was assassinated, and they satisfied themselves with wounding a few Americans and blowing up a couple of buildings. And that was it. Because they don't want war. So we don't need to destroy them to get safety. This is just, I keep saying it over and over, and don't miss it, man. It's the warluster's satisfaction. That's all this is. It's people who don't want to live with their neighbors, and they don't want to have a give and take. They don't want diplomacy because they want the easy path of just killing people they don't like. And if your loved one gets killed in the process, okay, that's cool. Like Lindsey Graham said it out loud, that's worth it to them, because it's not going to be their son or daughter that's going to get killed. It's not going to be their husband or wife that's going to get killed. They don't care. It's just another tool. You're just another tool in their toolkit to get the satiated lust that they have for somebody else's blood. Look, folks, I know that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I'm sorry. I'm calling it like it is, because we're talking about, even though I retired over 10 years ago, everybody in uniform is still like a brother or sister to me. I still feel that kinship. And it angers me, as you can see, when I hear somebody being so callous and casual with their lives of those that are currently serving here. It just makes me really, really angry. And it should make you angry too. And I'm going to ask you, take this video and send it to your member of Congress today. There's going to be, I think, Monday or Tuesday, there's going to be a war powers resolution that's going to be forced in the House by Representatives Ro Khanna. I can't think of who the Republican is right off the top of my head, but that's going to come. Send this to your representative right now. Find out who your representative is, your House of Representatives, and your senator. Send them an email. Write them a letter. Pick the phone up and call them. Do whatever you can, especially for those in the United States. Make your opinion known, especially for those service members and their families. You guys should be singing this louder than anybody. Do not throw their lives in the trash for your war lust. It's gross. It's disgusting. It's bad enough that we've shredded the United States Constitution and just ignored the rule of law. Those are bad and intone a lot of problems for the future. man, this is the blood of our sons and daughters here who have defended themselves and were willing to sacrifice their lives for us all. Don't throw that in the trash. That is a terrible, terrible thing, and it's something that needs to be called out. Thanks, folks. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.